if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 152. This is our 2021 WGC Workday Championship at the Concession. That's a mouthful. Plus Puerto Rico Open tips and picks episode. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA Tour action. Good morning, Paul. How are we?
Good morning, Steve. I'm very well. Sun's out. How are you?
I'm going to read this out again. World Golf Championship, Workday Championship at the Concession. Is that right?
It is a bit of a mouthful now. It's been fully updated and fully supported by Workday.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, it's an amazing thing, the PGA Tour, isn't it? They can come up with these fantastic titles for their for their tournament
at the drop of a hat.
Oh, it really rolls off the tongue, that one, doesn't it? it's also, when you look back, isn't it? You've got the old WGC Cadillac Championship, the WGC Mexico Championship. It's all very, and now you've got the Workday Championship at the Concession.
Yeah, it was the WGC CA as well for a while. Wasn't
it? CA, yeah. Dell Technologies.
All sorts.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge. There is no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on social media. Paul is at golf betting. He's inching, he's eking his way to those 10,000 followers. And I am available at Bamford Golf. Please follow Paul. Why not? Getting closer to 10,000. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I'll be pulling together my WGC Workday Championship at the Concession Golf Betting Show in a couple of hours' time. That one will roll off the tongue as well on that particular video. What should we call it? The WGC at the Concession, maybe?
WGC Workday, do that.
Yeah, WGC Workday, that'll be it. Right, okay. Take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Now, you know, last week, Paul, I put out a request for our listeners in the UK. We had, not that I'm going to read them out now, but we had 3 5-star reviews appear on Apple Podcasts on Friday.
Fantastic.
So we're eking towards that 100 barrier. We're already past it in the US. So thank you to you guys. I've also had we've had some 5-star reviews from the US in the last week. So keep them coming. But if you're in the Great Britain and you are listening, please take time. 5 stars, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Let's get through that 100 review barrier in the UK. I'll read out a couple here that we've had recently. This one, great golf podcast, 5 stars. Great golf podcast for both bets and daily fantasy to go along with the write-up. That is also very useful. Both give good insights on players, course info, comp courses, have adapted their player nicknames. I like T4 Tony as well. That is from Jim C. And he is in West Des Moines in Indiana. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Jim. Haven't you updated your Tony Finau nickname now, Steve? Isn't he T2 Tony now?
I think what we need to do is call him T2 Tony at non-majors and T4 Tony at majors.
it's a flexible nickname.
I had some guy, I could dig it out. Some old guy on Twitter on Sunday was doing his nuts to me saying that my T4 Tony was about to go in the garbage in the garbage bin. And then I tweeted back with laughy faces when clearly T4 Tony did his T4 Tony bit. We'll talk about that in a short while. Another one, 5 stars. And this is from Alan Blackett. And Alan is up in Newcastle upon Tyne, a lovely part of the country. Great show, especially on a Friday and Saturday night. Great show every week, lads. Great breakdown of stats and form on both tours. I think it would be great if Steve and Paul would put up a transatlantic each way double every week on the show. Would be fun. And that is thank you. Thanks from Alan in Newcastle upon Tyne.
Yeah, cheers, Alan. I tend to put yours and my headline tips up as a double anyway, just on a personal basis.
Paul. absolutely off your rocker.
Oh, Steve, you know it'll come good. We had one before. We had one a couple of seasons back.
How far is your Bet365 account in the red? How are you? When they bring in this new legislation, how are you going to be able to top it up?
It's all peaks and troughs in this game, Steve.
Yes, I agree with that. So you do that, do you?
Yeah.
So let me get this straight. This week, you are going to put up... Oh, I can't say the names. I'll leave the listeners in suspense for this week. Really? Okay, fair play. It'll come in one day.
I'm thinking back to when we each way. We've had a few, but I remember back. So we're going back a little while now, aren't we? But I remember back when I got Brett Rumford at the World Super Six.
Yeah,
the
Perth same International.
Week.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and the same week you put up Dustin Johnson. That must have been.
That would have been at the Genesis Invitation, 9-1.
Yeah, so that was a 500 because Rumford was 50-1, so that was over 500-1 at that time.
Wow.
Absolute cracker.
And you're still living off the balance.
that's it. Literally. My PayPal balance is gradually eroding week after week.
Okay.
There's another one in the bag to come.
Well, Alan in Newcastle, it's a deal. We'll mention the each way double every week ongoing. Maybe we should choose what our favourite bet is of the four or five that we've put up and say this is my nomination.
It doesn't necessarily have to be the shortest price, does it? You could have a longer priced each way element that you fancy more. But,
I really like one of mine this week and he isn't the shortest price. So, okay.
Mm.
Brilliant. Right, I suppose we need to talk about last week, the Genesis Invitational. I had Dustin Johnson in the last group, the world number one, who'd hold a 28 footer for par. The first thing he did on Sunday morning.
17, but yeah.
Oh, it's 17 footer, yeah. For par, which everyone was saying, well, that's a bogey straight off. So he pars that. Mm. And then for the next, what would it have been? 22 holes?
He shoots
one over par.
That's mad.
That's disappointing.
I didn't see it, Steve. When he made that par, in my mind, that was the tournament. You know that he was going to push on from there. He was going to birdie the par five coming home on Sunday morning and just motor ahead with the players that were around him. It seemed like the most feasible solution. And I didn't top him up. I backed him pre-event as you had, but. It seemed like he was going to go through and do that. And even for the first few holes on the final round.
It's 200 par. Everything was fine.
Yeah.
We were waiting for the Sam Burns implosion.
Yep.
Maybe, Paul, maybe Tony T4 Finau put the mental squeeze on Dustin Johnson and Dustin cracked. There's an angle for you. I knew that Tony was going to put a run on it, and I did tell you this. I put a just to cover him off and just to, I don't know, maybe it was just to really put the kiss of death on him. I literally put £2 on him on Betfair Exchange Sunday morning, and I think he was 18-1 because he was already in the hutch at 500. I just knew he was coming. I knew a charge was coming. It was just, you just knew it. And sure enough, I think he traded at 1.1, didn't he?
He was super short at one point. Burns was, I don't think he got that short, Burns, but he was kind of 1.3-ish at one point. Homer was clearly very low at one point as well before Finau came through. And, you know, any or all of them could have won it. And, you know, clearly in the end it was Homer. And well done to Barry as well, because I know Barry wasn't on the podcast last week, but
he'd given us a
quick view of his top three, and one of which... was Max Homer.
Well done, Barry. And well done to all the listeners, because I know Max had been playing some great stuff in the West Coast. Top 10 the week before Pebble.
Yeah.
And don't forget that first win of his, now two PGA Tour wins. That first win came at Quail Hollow. It's not as if this guy is ripping up the Puerto Rico Open at 26 under, is it? Or he can actually play these tough, classical US layouts and win. So good player, Homer, and he's burst into the world's top 50 now and got a place in this week's WGC Workday. You see what I did there? WGC Workday. Yeah.
And he's looking very much like Sam Burns would get that final spot, wasn't it? But yeah, Homer's came through and did it, despite missing that tiddler on the 18th hole, which would have effectively won it outright without the need to go to a playoff. But it's not easy to get over the line, is it? You know, Finau had his chances as well, didn't he, in the playoff?
We did say, didn't we?
Longer putt, but...
We did say the link between Torrey Pines and Riviera is unbelievable. You've got Homer. He's played it five times, Torrey Pines. Miscut, 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 9th, 18th. So he's got a top 10 at Torrey Pines, the Kikuyu, the Poa Greens. He's also finished 10th and 7th, which was the outing before Riviera at Pebble Beach on those Poa Greens. So these links between Poa and Pebble Beach, Torrey Pines and Riviera are 100%. And like Tony Finau, he destroys Torrey Pines each and every year. Do you think Finau is a decent bet for the US Open at Torrey Pines?
I think any each way bet on Finau at that kind of 25, 30, whatever the number is, mark.
Top 10.
It's probably worth a punt because he's so hyper consistent and he's clearly given himself chances. The scenario that unfolded on Sunday was the perfect scenario for Finau to get that second win, to get a more prestigious win on under his belt, and to break in the third last group. Yeah, yeah, with the pressure off to a degree, put in a flying round, and hopefully post a total that's going to be good enough for no one else to catch. I mean, clearly, if you've got someone like Dustin Johnson who's in that final group and puts the kind of round together that you'd expect him to, that's not going to happen. But it didn't. You know, that it was almost the perfect storm, but it still didn't happen. Got to be frustrating for him because he did play. You know, that Sunday round was outstanding. It was really good stuff, but just not quite good enough.
I think that is three consecutive runner-up positions for Tony, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
I'm just checking that. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. And he's clearly picking up an awful lot of world ranking points as a result of these lofty finishes.
Well, he's jumped into that automatic top six in the Ryder Cup for Team USA, and he hasn't won.
No.
But yeah, fourth at the American Express, second at the Farmers, second in the Saudi International, and then second at the Genesis Invitational. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah,
craziness.
He just needs that win, doesn't he? And you know, we've talked at length about it. And when he gets that win, I think he'll. You know, it wouldn't surprise me with the form that he's in. He gets a win. He goes and wins the next week or his next start.
Oh, my Lord, Paul.
You know. It's that kind of breakthrough that will just trigger something special, I think.
I am in shock here.
Go on.
4-0-1 right now for the US Open at Torrey Pines. Daniel Berger, 25-1.
Yes, it's a shame you're not going to get those extended each way prices in the anti-post market.
Well, you get six with Betfair Sportsbook right now. So you can get six places, Betfair Sportsbook, 40-1, Tony Finau at Torrey Pines at a US Open.
Mm.
That, great bet. Tommy Fleetwood, 33-1 at a golf course he's barely played at and likely to struggle at. Wow. Webb Simpson, 28-1 at Torrey Pines in the US Open.
Yeah. Maybe verging a little bit long for Webb at the US Open.
My Lord. Well, I'm in shock.
Last words, then.
I'm in shock. I'm in just total shock. Anyway, so DJ, yeah, cocked up for me. I had Patrick Cantlay, my kind of each-way insurance bet. He was in the same group as Tony. He shoots one over par as well. So I end up with a total blank. Unbelievable.
Yeah, from a good position. Which is disappointing.
Unbelievable. Yes, not good. Not good at all. But there's always next week with golf betting. Mm. I don't know whether to just quickly run through this Puerto Rico Open and get it done and dusted. What do you think?
Yeah,
everyone will be sitting here going, oh, Steve, for God's sake, get on with this WGC, will you? We don't want to know about the Puerto Rico Open. And that's the point, because if I do it last, they'll all switch off. So if I quickly run through it now, 10 minutes.
Good strategy, Steve.
Get it done. Crackle. And then we've got the main course, Paul. We've got the real, the juicy main course coming up behind. Right, we'll do that. Now, I panicked. And I don't think I was the only one. When I saw that the Puerto Rico Open this year was being played at Grand Reserve Country Club. And you're like, is this a new course, Steve? I'm like, oh, no. Surely not a new... But it isn't. Basically, it's been renamed. This has been called... Oh, Trump was involved at one point.
It was
and then Cocoa Beach.
Cocoa Beach, Trump.
Oh, it's had various different names over the years. It's clearly the alternate event, so they play this on the PGA Tour, whilst the best in golf, apart from Tiger Woods and Paul Casey, play the WGC. And what you tend to find is that a couple of the rejects from the WGC Top 50, or the World Golf Ranking Top 50, come and play here. Because it's clearly in their schedule, and the European Tour isn't running. So I think Peters plays this week. I'm still getting over that 40-1 for Tony Finau. That's genuinely shocked me.
Steve, you'll have a couple of minutes while I'm talking about the WGC to get your...
Might have to have a little dabble on the exchange if he's 40-1 already. Anyway, shush. Right. So, Triple H Sport have just changed their... they've gone from 5.25 to 7 places at the Puerto Rico Open, Paul. They keep doing this mid-Tuesday switchover, which I'm not a fan of at all.
Yeah, a few of them playing this game, isn't it?
They're cutting the odds, of course. Now, Puerto Rico Open, we've got, at the head of the market, Matt Wallace. Now, Matt Wallace, you'd think, well, world top 50, he'd be playing in Florida, but he isn't because he's just slipped out of that spot. Max Homa has jumped in. Jordan Spieth was really, really looking like he could get in there. Just fell backwards at Riviera. Sam Burns was, that tournament last week had so many ranking points. It was almost like a major, wasn't it? If you won that, didn't Homa jump like 40 or 50 spots to get into the world's top 50 by winning that?
Yeah. Well, Burns would have been sitting about 36th or 38th had he won.
Wow.
And as it happens, he dropped right away out.
So I'm looking at a field with Matt Wallace at the head of it. Most books have Thomas Peters marked up as the favourite. I'll repeat that. Most books have Thomas Peters marked up as the favourite. I mean, 12-1 at one spot.
In the European Tour events, he keeps popping up as the favourite.
He never wins, Paul. Win. No. So I've got Poulter, Peters, Wallace and Griot, all kind of joint favourites, this 16-1, 14-1 kind of mark. Then you can get Brandon Grace in a couple of spots at 20-1. Have to say, the only bookmaker that I found this week that have gone eight places each way of 50 odds at both the PGA, at both the WGC Workday and the Puerto Rico Open. Coral. That's
good.
Phenomenal. And you can get Brandon Grace right now, eight places each way at the Puerto Rico Open at 20 to 1, eight places, which is the best market price out there.
Yeah, and given the WGC is only a field of 72 as well, to have eight spots each way is a strong proposition this week.
We've mentioned them for years, haven't they? But they were always they were the first ever bookmaker to offer 10 places each way at a major. That was the 2017 PGA Championship. They then had this really brilliant, consistent stance of seven spots on both PGA Tour and European Tour full field events. They've done that for years. They've now realised, of course, that the whole market has shifted to eight, apart from this week, and they've kept the eight places going. So eight places each way at both events. That is an amazing value this week, has to be said. If you haven't got a Coral account, a golf betting system, you can sign up to a new sportsbook offer there, Republic of Ireland and UK listeners. Bet £5, €5, get €20 or £20 off free bets. As your welcome package, key terms and conditions, of course, available at Golf Betting System. So yes, Coral really jumped. They just jumped front of face this week with eight places each way on both. Griot, Wallace, Peters, Poulter, Grace. They're the big five names at the top of the books this week. Benny Ann. I had a good look at Benny Ann. It's just difficult to get excited, isn't it? It's difficult to get excited because if you look at the historical odds of the winner of this tournament over the, if we go back to 2010, it's 90 to 1. And yeah, Victor Hovland won here last year, 12 to 1 favourite. He just about squeaked past Josh Teeter, who I think was 125 to 1. And Hovland, who was clearly the best player in the field, managed to grab his first ever professional and PGA Tour victory here.
Yeah. Big part in the last, wasn't it? From
Tony Finau won here in 2016. Yeah. 50-0 to 1. We've had Bryson DeChambeau finish runner-up here at 80 to 1.
Back in the day.
All it says to me is, let's pick some players further down that are likely to be better players in the future than they are now, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
I can't be chasing Emiliano Griot at 16 to 1. No chance. And yeah, he'd probably finish third or seventh. Might even finish 10th once he's done his usual Sunday performance. Can you imagine me back in Emiliano Griot right now on a Sunday? Wow.
I think you'd have to switch every electrical device off for the whole of Sunday and just keep your fingers crossed.
I've got to praying in the back garden. That's not working either. So it's a Griot with my money on him at 16 to 1. Wow. He'd missed the cut. Griot could win. Unlikely. Wallace, clearly a class player. Thomas Peters in Ryder Cup year. I think he'd be a great addition to the Ryder Cup team, but he's a long way off right now. And Ian Poulter, the postman. And Padraig Harrington is on the property. So I get this. I think Wallace will play well. I think Peters will play well. I can see Poulter playing well. He played quite nicely at Saudi, Poulter. But yep. I can't back Ian Poulter at 16 to 1. Sorry. Brandon Grace showed too much at Riviera, now being slashed from 20 to 1. The one that I had a very, very good look at and didn't back was Andrew Putnam. But again, 25 to 1. How people can back Patrick Rodgers at 25 to 1, that guy is a car crash. The first one I actually got to and I thought, this guy makes logical sense, Tom Lewis. Tom Lewis was second in a World Golf Championship in July last year. So that tells you that boy, he's clearly a talent. He's He plays well by the coast, and you and I have had this conversation. I would have said over a pint, but we can't do that anymore. We've had this conversation over Skype in the last 12 months. I know we have. Where do you think that Tom Lewis can go well in the States? And you say to me, it's got to be near the coast. It's got to be at a tournament that's going to be kind of easier scoring. And with width, the most important thing, width off the tee, because he's not straight off the tee at all, is he?
No. He needs a little bit of room. I think he needs that kind of exposed view from off the tee to kind of really feel comfortable. But yeah, you've only got to look at his European Tour efforts, his Portugal Masters wins, and it kind of starts to bring into...
Yeah.
Bring to shape the kind of player that he is. And I agree, in terms of scoring, I think he needs it to be, kind of high teens is probably the ideal number in that kind of bracket, 20 under maybe.
Yeah. I don't think he'll get that this week, I think, because the wind's up. I mean, we're talking, but then this isn't Open Championship cutting win where you can't get the ball more than 200 yards. This is 15 to 20, maybe gusting 25 on the odd day in 25 degrees Celsius. You get the ball cuts through there easy enough. But yeah, I agree. What you just said is perfect, really. Sixth and seventh at the DP World Tour Championship at the Earth Course. Third at the Dubai Desert Classic. That's a little bit more tree-lined, I know that. But, you know, and then you look at his record at the Lynx Dunhill up at St Andrews. You know, fifth and eighth, I think, in the last two renewals there. Just loves playing. Low scoring. I think it'll be about 15, maybe 17 under par this week. And I think that's right in his wheelhouse. Came from nowhere at Pebble Beach. 36 holes. He was in the second last group Saturday. Played with Casey and Cantlay. That was all a bit too much for him. Shot 2 over 74. Came back with a 3 under 69 on Sunday. Finished 14th. Just playing some really... You know, the other thing I love about it, he's a great player. Not very well known in the States, but Lewis is a quality player. And you just look at how he's... You know, he basically hit the scene as a youngster, didn't he? He won the Portugal Open.
Yeah.
Didn't he do something at the Open before then from absolutely nowhere? The Open Championship?
Yeah, that Portugal Masters, I think that was only his third professional start, something like that. And, he caught everyone by surprise then. And everyone thought he was really going to push on and be, this major star, because he's clearly a talented lad. And I don't know, just lost his focus a bit, but he seems to have it back. He's doing a lot of travelling and a lot of, you said to me earlier, he dipped back down to the Challenge Tour.
He did, didn't he? Had to rebuild from nowhere.
Yeah, to find his form, to find some confidence. One on the Challenge Tour, one on the European Tour. Clearly his next step professionally is to come over and win a PGA Tour event. But when you're finishing second, as you said just a second ago, in a WGC in elite company
in August, he's mixing it there with Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka going down a stretch.
Yeah, exactly. And you compare that to the field that you've got presented here at the Puerto Rico Open. It's just chalk and cheese. I'm with you, Steve. I'm on Lewis, which if we're both on the same play is a recipe for disaster. But logically, at the price relative to a lot of his peers, and they're known quantities at the top, aren't they? You know, he knows a Poulter, he knows a Wallace. You know, these aren't players that he's got some kind of ingrained fear of. He's played against him on the European Tour a number of times.
I managed to get him 28-1 with Coral and the eight places. There was a smidge of 33s out of a Unibet. That's gone. That's gone right now. So he also qualified for the PGA Tour by winning the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, a one-off trip to the Korn Ferry in September 2019, which they played in Florida. And that's how he got on the PGA Tour. So he's not averse to playing lower levels of golf and winning. I don't think he's going to turn up here and think, what am I doing here? This is a rubbish tournament. And just have the hump from the start and miss the cut. I actually think he's clearly way outside the 125 in the FedEx Cup. He can use this week on a course I think he's going to thrive on. And kind of, this could guarantee his playing rights for next 2 years if he won this.
Yeah, that was it. There's a big carrot, isn't there, this week? Big carrot,
huge carrot.
PGA Tour card is big for these guys.
So you are good. I think the odds are good. The odds are fine. I think he's one of the most talented players in the field, and he's got the absolute carrot dangling there that says if I can win this or even get a top two finish, get a bundle of FedEx Cup points, this is likely to be a huge step in getting me my playing privileges for next season. So, yeah, why wouldn't you? Yeah, just I think it shouts Tom Lewis at the top. The other one I really like, and this is the guy I'm going to nominate for my transatlantic each way double, is Will Gordon. If you look at Finau, if you look at that guy Martin Trainer that won this, and you also look at Victor Hovland, they are long drivers of the golf ball. And Gordon is right up there as well. Very, very long off the tee. And he just did enough at the Pebble Beach last time out to, you know, you look at the leaderboards and you see names. Someone tweeted me or left me a message on YouTube saying, Will Gordon this week, watch out for him. And I kind of responded, go, yeah, good luck with that. And sure enough, all of a sudden, you're seeing this Will Gordon near the top of the leaderboard. You think, oh, okay. But yeah, he's just gravitating. He's a good player, played very well at college. You know, he basically was on the same college circuit as Morikawa, as Wolf, as Hovland. And you just look, I think got to number 8 in the world. He was getting beaten by those guys most weeks, but he was always in the mix. He's got a top 4 at college level at Pebble Beach, Carmel Cup 2018, where he finished behind Matthew Wolf. He's beaten Colin Morikawa at junior level, at college level. He also won the Tavistock Intercollegiate Invitational at Isleworth Golf and Country Club in Orlando, which again is a big, big college tournament. So this guy's good. And he got his place on the PGA Tour last year by finishing second at the Travelers Championship. So he earned special temporary membership. Now, there aren't many, Jordan Spieth and the like, the Wolves, there aren't many that do that. So he's a talented boy, this Gordon. I just think his game fits and he played very, very nicely at Pebble Beach a couple of weeks ago. He actually shot an opening round 6 under 66, which was the best score of the tournament at Spyglass Hill. No one beat that. Backed that up with a 4 under 68 on Saturday. So he was in 11th spot going into Sunday. Finished 21st. Gordon, yeah, love Will Gordon this week. I think he's got the game that suits. When he's on form, hits lots of greens, and he is as long as you like off the tee. So Will Gordon for me, I went for the 50-1 price point with Unibet, 6 places each way, 50 odds. I'm happy with that 50-1. He got priced up first off 55-1 with Bet365. And that then quickly got backed in to their current 40-1.
Yeah, there's a few players that have been dropped out of the tournament as well, which has impacted a few prices.
Absolutely. That's the trouble with this as well, isn't it? You and I are constantly updating. There's this player withdraws and they've invited Umar Uresti to play. Your old mate's Axley. Playing. Who's the one that you like? Who's playing?
Eric Axley.
Eric Axley, he's in. So I've got Lewis, I've got Gordon. Bronson Bagoon is another one. 7 place each way, 50 odds with Boyle Sports. He's 60-1. Bagoon's been playing some reasonable stuff of late. Hits a lot of greens. Very upwardly mobile in my 8-week trackers. I noticed with him that he did 2 years of the PGA Tour, Latino America Tour, getting some really good top fives, top tens, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Peru. So, you know, that's 2 whole years as a young pro in the South American, Central America kind of conditions. And he played here in his 2016 rookie season. No one had kind of come across Bronson Bagoon at that point. He was third after 36 holes. That's back, that's 5 years ago. So you'd like to think if Bagoon got somewhere in the mix, he might actually hang around at 60-1 this week.
Yeah, potentially.
I can remember him, the last time he was in contention was at the RSM Classic end of last year when he played in the final group. This one's going to break Barry's heart. He played in the final group with Zach Johnson and his nemesis, Robert Streb. So, yeah, Bagoo, I think he's a decent player at 60-1. And finally, if you want a horse for a course at the Puerto Rico Open, who is usually 16 or 20-1, but this year he's 75-1, it's got to be Scott Brown, isn't it?
He loves the track, doesn't he?
Scott Brown.
He does love the track.
16th, 5th and 6th at El Chameleon on those Paspalum greens over the years. Here, 5th, 1st, 64th, 10th, 5th, 17th, 10th, 67th. That's three top five, a win, two top fives and a further two top tens in 8 appearances. I'd take a sixth place this week at 75-1 for Scott.
No, relative to the field, I know he's not done a great deal form-wise recently, but relative to the field, he's not a bad price, and given his liking for the track. As you said, he's the kind of player that pops up on the tracks and the...
That he likes.
The layouts that he likes. It often is by the coast, actually, with Scott Brown.
He was second, get this, second last year at the Genesis Invitational. Second behind Adam Scott.
Yeah, I remember.
That second place just got, you know, instantly. Second place, $700,000 or whatever the prize was.
Yeah. Job done.
Barrel load of FedEx Cup points, so he qualifies for the playoffs. And then literally after that, you don't see him again. But in the build-up to that second at the Genesis, his form was miscut, 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 miscut. So this is the point, isn't it? He just goes to a tour. He goes to a course that he gets on with. He always plays well with his best mate Kevin Kisner at that TPC Louisiana where they play the team thing.
Just
look at him. He literally, there's 5 or 6 courses that he goes to that he's got a chance at. Last time out at Pebble Beach, finished 30th, and that's his joint best ever finish at Pebble. And I know this won't happen, but I'll say it anyway. 2013, he finished 30th at Pebble, couple of good results in the Corn Ferry, and then won this. So he was 30th a couple of weeks ago, hit enough greens, putted well enough. Yeah, I think he was like 24th at halfway, ended up finished 30th. I just think 75-1 is at 7 places each way, 50 odds, we bet 365. I'll take that on Scott Brown.
There's far worse out there, I think.
He's one of those, you know, and this is, I think, I need to do more of this. I need to do more of these. Well, look at players' ceilings, Steve, and it's like, well, Scott Brown, if you looked at his stats on, you know, this tracker, that tracker, and every tracker, you ain't ever going to pick him. But if you just look at him and say, well, 75-1 against a bloke that absolutely loves the golf course and has played half decently last time he played, I'll have a bit of that. So Brown, 75-1. Bagoon, love that name, 60-1. Will Gordon, 50s. And Tom Lewis, the local Welling Garden City man. If he plays awful, I'll be knocking on his door within the middle of next week going, Tom, what are you doing, mate?
You could cycle to his house.
I could cycle to his house now. I'll go and see Tom. Tom Lewis, 28-1. Those are my four for the Puerto Rico Open. Have you got any? And don't say Aaron Baddeley.
Yeah, I've backed Lewis. I have got two. I've got two actually. Yeah, I've backed Ted Potter Jr. 80-1.
You love. You've got that bit TPJ in it.
Well, yeah, he's one of those players that can actually win a golf tournament, isn't he?
He's like Scott Brown, isn't he? This is the point. Yeah. He could just come from nowhere, and all of a sudden he's in the mix, and you know he's gilt edged.
Yeah, I think I read 19 professional wins in total. A couple on the PGA Tour, a couple on the Nationwide Tour, and most of them a Hooters Tour or whatever below that. But one of those wins was at Pebble Beach. He clearly can play coastal stuff. Mm. 18th at Torrey Pines a couple of weeks back. Yeah. 6th after day one in Phoenix. That's, you know, they're a couple of good flashes of form for Ted Potter Jr. Because prior to that, I think...
Totally inappropriate golf courses as well. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I think before that, he had 11 consecutive missed cuts. He's one of those players who suddenly finds... He's like a Jim Herman, isn't he? He suddenly finds something and goes and wins a golf tournament. 6th here last year. That was his best finish of the season. three attempts here, never missed a cut. For a man who misses so many cuts, 48th, 29th and 6th, progressive form,
amazing.
80-1. I thought, I'm taking Ted. So Ted's in the team. The other one I've backed is a guy that I backed a few weeks back in a higher quality field. It's Sam Ryder. I know you're not a fan, but I'll give him another chance, 50-1. He won the Pinnacle Bank Championship on the web.com back, 2017, by 8 strokes in total. So he's clearly capable and shown a little bit of form recently. 6th after day one at the American Express. 10th in total at Torrey Pines. He was 1st for strokes gained approach, 5th for strokes gained tee to green that week. So some quality ball striking. Handy in Phoenix at halfway before drifting away. 3rd here last year. And that was after opening with a 70, which kind of put him mid-division and improved quite dramatically from there. So I think when he finds form, he's good. I mean, go back to 2018 when he was on the PGA Tour. He could have won 3 or 4 tournaments. He was very, very close. And he may be finding something again. And this kind of level should present some decent opportunities for him, I think.
I'll let you into a little secret. I had a really close look at Sam. In my greens and regulation tracker, he sits 3rd, I think it is. As you said, I mean, I'm just backing up what you've basically said with numbers. He's 4th in my 8 weeks greens and reg tracker, which is better than Emiliano Grillo. So it shows you he's clearly in a lot of greens. And he's also tied 2nd with Rob Oppenheim, strokes gained on approach last 8 weeks. That's better than the likes of Brandon Grace, Matt Wallace, Ian Poulter, who are in the top 7. So, 60-1 is a good price. Hasn't he been top 5 here before? Was it last year?
Yeah, 3rd last year, So a bit of recent course form a few snippets of
he's just one of those. When I've backed him in the past, he's been total and utter garbage.
It's difficult when you've got a bit of baggage of the player, isn't it?
I expect he'll go well with you.
A living hope.
But yes, actually, he was one of the very few this week I thought Ryder wasn't a totally abysmal price. I'll tell you the other one I had a good close look at. Is Cameron Percy.
Okay.
He was chalked up at 70-1 with Bet365 first being, and he's now sitting at 50-1 across most firms. Trouble with Cam Percy is you know he won't win because he never wins. But to actually, if you just said, well, all I want, guys, a couple of decent names at a decent each-way price, where if one of them lands top eight if you go with Coral, I'll make enough, I'll cover me week, make a little bit. I think Ryder's a good one. Percy's another good one. He's been playing some nice stuff, Cam Percy. I was watching some of that. I was watching Jordan Spieth a few weeks ago, and you know they've now got the leaderboard constantly in the bottom left of the TV coverage.
I was
watching a round recap, and there's Cam Percy, middle of Saturday, at Pebble Beach, and he was like tied 2nd on the leaderboard. And then I went to my app, and then sure enough, he's ended up 18th because he's completely and utterly collapsed as soon as he got anywhere. Proper nosebleed job. But he's clearly playing, somewhere like this, and you and I know enough about him over the years, low scoring, absolutely abysmal field. Cam Percy is more than capable of a top 8, top 7 finish.
Yeah, and if everyone else is getting a nosebleed at the same time, it's quite pronounced.
Who do you think is going to be cast iron in this field?
Exactly. Ted Potter Jr.
Yes, that's actually one. And I saw an interesting tweet actually, or a message on our Facebook group going, it was interesting that Max Homer, who had been in contention like once and converted, saw off Tony Finau in a playoff, who's in contention every week and never converts. And there's just this, players getting, some players just get the job done, don't they? Griot doesn't. Yeah. A TBJ does actually, once if you can get them into that spot.
It's getting them to the actual point of contention, isn't it?
I'm amazed you haven't mentioned your old mucker, who you mention in all of these second division PGA Tour, Johnny Vegas. I'm glad we've got off that one.
Yeah, there's a few. And if Badley had been shown a little bit more form rather than just a string of missed cuts, he might have been in the team.
He does like an alternate event, doesn't he, old Aaron?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I landed him once, 55-1 at that Barbasol, yeah. But he'd actually hit some greens in the build-up.
Yes, which with a putter as good as Badley, if he's finding some greens, then is a dangerous proposition at that kind of level.
Right. World Golf Championship. Work day, Paul.
Yes.
Let's go.
The WGC Workday Championship at the concession. It should be in Mexico, shouldn't it, again, for the fifth.
COVID.
Was due to be seven events, yeah. But no, the pandemic's put.
They'll go back there next year. They have to. It's part of the contract.
So. Yeah. They've got another three to fulfill. So,
it's Band-Aid, isn't it?
Yes, it just get something in the meantime. But no, fair play. They've managed to cobble something together. Workday has stepped up to the plate again, which they did back at Muirfield Village as well, didn't they? Back in or the middle of last year as well.
Yeah.
Which is good. They're obviously supporting the tour, which helps these events get played. And the Concession Golf Club in Florida is the alternative venue that's being played this week instead, which we'll go through in a second. But we've got an elite field here, field of 72. No cuts, and pretty much all of the elite here, the two you mentioned earlier, Tiger Woods and Paul Casey, are the two elite that aren't in. Brandon Stone, who also qualified, isn't playing. But the rest of the qualifiers and the world's top 50 are all here to make this field of 72. As you mentioned earlier as well, Coral, eight places each way, fifth of the odds for UK and Ireland punters. Is, you know, in a field of 72, that's covering off a big chunk of the market. So do check their prices before you place your bets. And you might be surprised. There are some crackers out there. The market in general, though, Dustin Johnson is the 13-2 favourite. John Rahm, 10-1. Rory McIlroy, 16-1. Drifted out a bit after last week, hasn't he? Xander, 16-1 also. Patrick Cantlay, putter went a bit south, didn't it? I expect that was the weight of your money on his back last weekend.
Of course.
But he could have been right in it last week, Cantlay.
He was right in it.
just before those 3, 4, 5 footers. Just
it's true, though. And this is the point, isn't it? A Cantlay, a Schauffele. They're just not clinical, are they, when they get in? I mean, don't forget, Cantlay should have won potentially the week before Pebble.
Yeah,
they win, but it's just they're not killers, are they? They just don't grab it and take it. And when you're paying 60, I mean, Cantlay, I'm seeing him at 12-1 in one spot.
Yeah, there's a bit of disparity. 12-1
with Unibet. I don't know what the odds compiler's done at Unibet, but he's certainly got a contrarian view this week. Isn't he? 12-1 on Cantlay, 16-1 on McIlroy.
Yes, interestingly, and again, I saw this mentioned on Twitter yesterday. The top of the market, they've gone really short on three or four of them, and then further down the list, there's a whole host of longer prices that have been as a result of their position at the top of the market. So it's again another one well worth checking out, just to make sure if they're offering longer prices than you would ordinarily expect, or from the bookie that you normally choose. But Cantlay's generally 18-1. JT, another poor performance last week, wasn't it? 18-1. Bryson, rinse and repeat. Same comment really. 20-1. Tony Finau, 20-1. Tyrrell Hatton, 22s. Hovland's 22s. He's been backed in a bit from 25s. Brooks Koepka coming off a win, 28-1. There'll be some takers for that, I'm sure. Then you've got the likes of Webb Simpson, Berger, Reed, all 30-1, 40-1, bar that list of, what, a dozen or so players that I've just read through. Cracking field, absolutely outstanding field, as you'd expect for a World Golf Championship. And they're playing it at the concession. And now, the concession's new to the tour. It's a track that was named after that 1969 Ryder Cup, where Jack Nicklaus conceded a short putt in the final hole to Tony Jacklin, and that was known as the concession. And the two of those guys got their heads together, created this track. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's a Nicklaus track with a little bit of Jacklin input, but they're both named as part of the build for this particular course. Opened in 2006 and is a 7,474-yard par 72 Parkland affair. Reasonable sized fairways. The main test here is on the greens, on and around the greens. I think it's a second shot course. I think you need to find your proximity and you need to be getting the right parts of these greens to be scoring. If you're not, then there's going to be three putts everywhere and chipping and putting from around the greens and saving par is going to be particularly tough. So Bermuda Tiff Eagle greens, by the way, which are quite prominent around the kind of Florida area anyway.
Yeah.
But yes, I think for me, just looking at the spec and looking at some of the holes and reading some of the comments and, you know, there's enough info out there in the ether to kind of form a view of it. It seems like quite a tough track. It seems like one where your performance on and around the greens is going to trump how you perform from off the tee. So that's kind of how I've shaped things for this week. And pine and oak trees line some of the holes. Others got water in place, so there's a mix of challenges there. Five tiers on a lot of these greens, though, and you need to be in the right part. So you're going to need to be really dialed in with your irons, or putting like Brad Faxon, or scrambling like Patrick Reed to be getting yourself a decent score this week. Jack Nicklaus Design, as I said, so there's plenty of others to review. There's quite a few that I've listed, courtesy of a previous preview from yourself, Steve, in my preview this week. Some that I've picked out as comparable courses or worth looking at least. Muirfield Village, they've used exactly the same sand in the bunkers here as they use over there in Ohio as well. So some correlation there, and of course another Nicklaus Design as well.
Right.
PGA National, Tiff Eagle, Florida set up. Sherwood Country Club, which another one that you mentioned to me in terms of their not quite as severe greens, but certainly undulating and certainly one of the more testing parts of that track. And they played Sherwood at the it was the Zozo, wasn't it?
The Zozo, which Cantlay actually managed to see off Xander Schauffele, who I was on that week.
Yes.
He actually showed some fortitude when he didn't have my money on him, and Xander did. One question for you, and I know it's really difficult for you to answer because you're sitting over here in the UK.
Yeah.
Clearly, an easy comp course to draw upon would be PGA National, which, as we know, is a Jack Nicklaus course in Florida. But from what you're saying, it feels like it might be quite different. For a start, it's a 72 over a 70. But you're mentioning trees, and I mean, PGA National is just exposed. Water everywhere.
Yeah, there's a right mix. I mean, some of them have got these pine and oak trees lining the holes, and they're not encroachingly so. It's not a Valderrama type setup, but there's certainly a consideration there. And others are completely exposed with water. You know, down the side of the holes.
More Bay Hill like. Bay Hill's a bit more tree lined in certain spots, and then
I mean, again, if you read a lot of the comments around it, a lot of people talk about the severe difficulty of this, and it will be fascinating to see exactly how it plays. And you know, I don't think they're going to want to make it as painfully difficult as a US Open. So I don't think it will be like that. The rough isn't said to be particularly thick. So I think really the challenge is going to be on and around these greens, and I don't think the scoring will get out of control. But equally, I think it will be if you're finding greens with regularity, finding the right parts of greens with regularity, or you really are playing well on and around the greens, then you'll find it. You'll find it scorable. I wouldn't be surprised if there's one of these events where you get some real disparity between the score at the top end and the score right at the bottom end. Which can be accentuated with these no-cut events where you've got players who are absolutely bomb out and they end up 30 or 40 shots further adrift of the guys at the very top. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the kind of differential that we see here. But a bit of a guessing game because it is a new track to all of us, really. The only notable event that has been held here was the 2015 NCAA Championship, another one of these collegiate events similar to the ones you mentioned earlier. And there are a few players that you recognise the names of there. It was won by Bryson DeChambeau at 8 under over four rounds. CT Pan finished second at 7 under. Thomas Detry was third at 6 under. Paul Dunn was the interesting name for me. He finished fifth at 5 under. So if I'm thinking Paul Dunn, I'm instantly thinking a track that has got some room off the tee.
Yeah.
That does allow a lot of recovery style shots, and certainly rewards players who are better on and around the greens, because that is Paul Dunn's game, full stop. And I know back then he was, he was one of the up and coming talented players, and he's kind of dropped off a little bit. He'll come back, I'm sure, because Paul Dunn is a very
the other thing player. Is Paul. People talk about Bryson DeChambeau and purely about his driving. As we know, DeChambeau around and on the greens is elite level.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very good. So,
yeah, so I can see that. Paul Dunn, yeah. That's interesting.
You know, these guys, I mean, you're talking a collegiate event, so, you know, the setup, I'm sure it wasn't anywhere near as severe as a PGA Tour setup.
It's the fun.
But even so,
yeah.
8-under was the winning score over four rounds, so the scoring didn't get out of control there. I don't know, I'd be hard-pressed to guess a score this week, but...
is the wind getting up?
No, not at all. It's going to be the set
very
fair.
Very north Florida.
Yeah, 90 Fahrenheit in the afternoons, potentially. 5 to 10 miles an hour. So, you know, conditions are going to be scorable. If I was to hazard a guess, I'd say it's probably going to be low double figures. 12, 14, something like that would probably be but the order of the day. Your kind of classic mid-score level would be my guess. But... don't quote me on that, because I could be completely and utterly wrong. So we'll see next week how close I was. I guess other than that, we've not got a great deal to go on. You know, you've got the history of the Mexico Championship, the history of the Cadillac at Doral before that. I mean, just going through some of the names who've won that. Ernie Els in 2010 at 40-1. Nick Watney in 2011, 20-1. We were on Watney that week. Rose the year after, 66. I think I've picked a few of these winners over the years. I wonder if I was on Rose. I forget now. Tiger at 12s in 2013. Patrick Reed at 80 in 2014. DJ in 2015, 22-1. I was definitely on DJ because I remember that one. Adam Scott, the last year it was held at Doral, 12-1. And then over in Mexico, DJ 7-1. Phil Mickelson, 25-1 in 2018. DJ again. So DJ's won three of the last six of these. 11-1 in 2019. Patrick Reed, again, I was on Reed last year at 50-1. Usually quite comfortable and confident in this particular event. Complete change of track. But hopefully enough pointers as to what the kind of player should be. The other thing to draw out of those names, all of those players, all going back to 2010, each one of them had a top 10 finish in their last five starts. And of the last eight, each one of them in their previous five starts had either a win or a second place finish over their last five starts. So if you're looking at, you know, raw trends, then picking players who finished first or second over their last five starts could be a starting point for this week.
I'm busily going to our event stats now on the website to see who's done that in the last five outings.
I thought you were busily getting over to Betfair to get Tony Finau on at the
I still need to get on the US Open price.
You've got a couple of minutes while I talk through my picks, so crack on. I've bet four this week. I looked at the top of the market. DJ let you and I both down last week. Poor Sunday. As you said, 23 holes and could only muster one over. He wasn't putting particularly well in Saudi before that. And we kind of forgave him last week on the basis of his ability and his course form. But didn't quite work, did it? John Rahm, I was very, very close on Rahm. I must say I was very, very close. Backdoor top five last week. The thing that put me off, I listened to an interview, a very frank and raw interview with him about how he's adapting to his change to Callaway. And he's still adapting. It's not as if he's absolutely mastered it by his own estimation. He's still working. And in a truly elite field, I can see him placing. I can see him getting quite close. I just wonder, at that kind of 9-10-1 mark, is he a win-only bet? Because that's what it would be for me at that level. And I don't know. I just couldn't quite pull the trigger. I wouldn't be surprised to see Rahm go well. Rory, JT, Bryce, all of them played poorly last week. They could all bounce back, of course, but I couldn't take them on that basis. Cantlay, we won't mention his putting from last week. Xander and Finau, both of them love a second place. what money one of those guys finishes in second again. It wouldn't surprise anyone, would it, to see Xander or Finau. Both of them finish T2 next week or this week.
Yeah, but you can't take Xander at 14 to 1 to get you each way money, can you?
No. He's got to be a big and almost your only bet of the week to make it pay for that.
Doesn't tend to play much in Florida either, which would suggest he doesn't really like it.
Yeah, it might.
He doesn't play the Honda Classic. Doesn't tend to play Bay Hill. You can kind of read people's schedules.
I couldn't go with any of those guys. I started my team this week with Patrick Reed, defending champion, at 30-1. Mm. And I think when I think defending champions, I often think it presents a challenge with the media, the focus, the personal expectation. But Reed is. He's got the thickest of skins, hasn't he? If there's a player that you want who's got a thick skin who won't be bothered by any of that kind of stuff, it's Patrick Reed. And to be fair, he's needed that thick skin lately, hasn't he, with all of the shenanigans that have been going on. And, some of it or a lot of it not without its merit, I must say. But, he still won at Torrey Pines, didn't he? That was his penultimate start. 30-1 for a guy who won a couple of starts ago just shows you that he's, the whole level of his unpopularity just keeps his price at a backable level. And, I won't make any apologies for backing a guy that people don't particularly like, because I think in terms of the context of this market, he's a bet 30-1. So, I'll put everything else aside and stick with that aspect of it. I mean, for me, if the main challenge is on and around these greens, then someone with his mercurial talent around the putting surfaces has got to be taken on, I think. First for strokes going around the green at Torrey Pines when he won first for putts per greens in regulation. It was all about the short game that week. And if he's going to win this week, then it's going to be a very similar approach, I'm sure. A couple of WGC wins. Doral, also Mexico, can clearly win in this kind of company. His Augusta win, if we're talking about undulating greens, then his Augusta win has got to be something to consider as well. Jack Nicklaus Forms won the Humana back in the day. 4 wins in total on Bermuda greens. And I'm expecting a big, big week from Captain America this week. And 30-1, I'll take that. I'll take that every day of the week when there's a player that I think it fits the green or fits the course the way that he does. So Reed's at the top. Tyrrell Hatton I've backed as well, 22-1. And you can't. Sometimes you look at a price and you look at a player and feel it, it feels a little bit out of kilter, but it can't be with Hatton. He's playing so well. Up to 5th in the world now. Yeah. 4 wins in his last 22 starts globally. One in Abu Dhabi a few weeks back. 22nd in Dubai the week after a shocker in the first round. 76 he shot and followed that up with 64. Now, Tyrrell of old would have thrown his toys out the pram at that point, missed the cut and gone and sunbathed for a few days. But he seems a much calmer, I won't say calm, calmer character nowadays. And I think that's been borne by his success. And, the success that he's experienced, the way that he's playing, allows him to make these adjustments to his game and to continue to compete at the top level. 6th in Saudi after that. His long game looked really good. That coupled with his excellent short game should set him in decent stead here this week, I think. He's won in Florida. He won on the Tiff Eagle Greens last year. For the season today, 5th for proximity to hole, which is going to be important, I think. 11th for strokes gained approach. 3rd for 3 putt avoidance for the season as well, which is going to be a critical factor here this week, I think. 5 major top 10s, 3 top 10s in Mexico in this WGC from 4 starts. He's the kind of guy, I think the next step for Tyrrell is undoubtedly to win a WGC and a major. From his position in the world, from 5th in the world, and the way that he's playing, that is the logical next step. And I think he's playing well enough to do it, so... So 22-1, I'll take a bit of Tyrrell as well. The other two I've backed slightly longer. Cameron Smith, I remember you backing Smith at Augusta.
Yeah,
and I won't say I was sniffy about the tip because I always take on board what you say, but I remember looking at it and thinking, I can't really get on board with that. But he was excellent. It was a really good tip, and he gave you a cracking run for your money.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, DJ was too good.
Cruise control, yeah. He was in cruise control, DJ, but yes. Cam Smith was the best of the rest with Sungjae, wasn't he?
Absolutely. He was. I mean, 15 under he shot, and that would have been good enough to win 79 of the 84 Masters tournaments held in the past. So he's got to take a lot of heart out of that. Four rounds in the 60s as well, first player to do that in Masters history. And that was all driven by his short game. We know he's got an excellent short game. We know he's an excellent putter. Yeah. We know that his short game is really, really good. And he's clearly happy in this elite company now, because he'd already finished fifth at Augusta back in 2018 prior to that.
Yeah.
Fourth at the US Open in 2015. Fifth at the match play in 2018, WGC. Sixth at the WGC Mexico in 2019. So some good top five, top six finishes in this kind of company. But we know, for me, again, it's all about his short game. What we saw last week, though, fourth at Riviera, 13th for strokes gained off the tee, 10th for strokes gained approach, 2nd for strokes gained tee to green. And something you said in your preview for Cam Smith, when his long game is on, you couple that with the fact that he's got such a strong, strong short game, he's a very capable player. Very, very capable. The other point to note with Cam Smith, his best efforts tend to come. He's one of these players who tends to find form and then follow it up the next week and then maybe drift off a little bit.
Yeah.
So you go back to his 1-2 Australian PGA Championships. He finished 4th and then won. Finished 10th and then won. His Sony Open win in 2020 rather. He'd finished 10th on his previous start. So he prior to wins, form of 4-10-10. 4th last week at Riviera follows that trend perfectly. So quite happy to say. I've got early 60-1. There's a tiny bit of 60-1 left out there. He's been quite rightly backed in, Cam Smith. So if you fancy a bit of Smith, I'd jump on him before he gets tipped up by all and sundry and drops down to the kind of 40-1 level, which is probably closer to where he should be, in my view. So Cam Smith, yeah. And the final one, Christian Bezuidenhout. Who, I mean, I mentioned before, and you asked me a question a few weeks back about a player that I thought would go well, who's a little bit under the radar in some of the WGCs and majors. And I mentioned the South African, and I think this is, again, the kind of setup that should be absolutely perfect for him. So quite happy to put my money where my mouth is and back him here this week. 125-1, I got on him yesterday. Go back. He tried to make it onto the PGA Tour. It didn't quite happen because of COVID. He was in with a great shout coming into the Players last year. And clearly the Players only lasted 18 holes. And that was the end of that dream for him for the short term. Worked on his long game with his coach during lockdown. The results have been great, haven't they? A couple of late season wins in South Africa.
Yep.
That makes it 4 total wins in 33 starts up to that point. So again, the Players, you know, similar to Reed, similar to Hatton, I want players who've shown that ability to get over the line. And Bezuidenhout is one of those who's done exactly that. All at a low level, granted, European Tour or Sunshine Tour, but I think he can step up. He's that kind of player. Excellent short game, excellent putter. He needed to get that long game going to really put it all together. But you know, we've seen that happen. At the back end of the year, when he was winning these golf tournaments in South Africa, his long game was outstanding. And you couple that with a player who's so good on and around the greens, it's really quite potent. This year, 3 solid efforts in the Middle East to start. No better than 12th, but solid nonetheless. 2 of his 3 WGC efforts over his career have seen him sitting in 10th spot heading into the Sunday. So he's had a couple of semi-contending WGC efforts. The other one, he finished 29th in Mexico last year. That came straight after he'd won over in South Africa the previous week. So he'd literally won in South Africa, jumped on a plane, come over, and then finished 29th in Mexico. I think he's better than that. I think he can get himself into one of those each-way paying positions come Sunday evening. So yeah, they're my 4. Bezuidenhout, Cameron Smith, Tyrrell Hatton, and top of the shop is Patrick Reed. And in terms of that each-way double, Patrick Reed, Tom Lewis, absolutely the one for me this week. Absolutely the one. Anyone caught your eye on what you've been doing the rounds?
Florida Golf. A player that played really well last week took everybody by surprise.
Yep.
A guy that also has a win within that five outing stretch you were talking about.
Yeah, go on.
Matthew Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
55 or 60 to 1 out there at the moment.
Mm. Yeah.
Very, very underrated player, Fitzpatrick. And you said, if you can get on a player that's got a great short game, that's, you know, imminently been playing nicely with their irons,
mm-hmm.
that's Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
And I remember him last year, these tougher tests, these kind of 8-10 unders, that's where he comes to the party.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he can scramble, he putts brilliantly. That short game, where others give up and miss the cut, clearly not this week, but Fitzpatrick can hang around when the conditions and the scoring gets tougher. I like him, because I can remember him being leader at, was it Bay Hill?
Yeah.
1 year, yeah. And you look last year, he finished third at the Memorial Tournament, and then I think he may have led that WGC at St Jude, or was that the year before? It was one or t'other. Anyway, he seems to do okay in WGCs. Sixth last year at the one at St Jude. And the previous year at St Jude, 2019, was fourth. That's the point, isn't it? Tough Bermuda track.
Yeah,
a short game, a priority. I could see Fitzpatrick going, well, I have to join you on Hatton. I think he'll go well. I think Cam Smith will go well. The other one I fancy that could kind of surprise us again, you know, it's a big tournament, WGC, Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. It's a bit similar to Reed, isn't it? You know, very recent win, yet he's still available at that kind of backable 28, 30 to 1 price point. And it was interesting with Brooks to see him win that tournament, because we've talked at length about his focus being purely on the majors, but perhaps that sent a positive feeling through. You know, to win a golf tournament is going to give you some buoyancy, isn't it? It'll make you feel good, and you know, clearly playing well enough to do that. Could he come and do it again?
I don't know if he looks back, but he might feel this slightly unfinished business with the WGCs, because you remember that head-to-head he had with Thomas at St Jude last year, where Thomas come and took it from him. And I think were we on Brooks, or we were close on think when Brooks was, he duffed that chip on 17 to make birdie. And it went through the back.
Yep.
Just the kind of tournament. And also, I just think that'd give him a second win would really give him that total confidence boost pre-Masters.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna back Brooks. I'm going to back Hatton. I'm going to back Smith, and I'm going to back Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I can see the logic with Fitz. And
I'm going nowhere near Close Your Eyes Sergio, although it is Bermuda grass.
There's a lot of desert Bermuda form on Matthew Fitzpatrick's CV as well from the European Tour, which you can draw into in terms of putting on these Tiff Eagle greens. So I can see that.
I'm pretty certain that Cam Smith's win in Australia at those PGA Championships down in Oz are on Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens as well.
Yeah. I remember reading it on your Masters preview as well.
I always think he's better on Bermuda grass than he is actually on stuff like Poa, but
yeah, well, these are quite smooth. I mean, you know, you're going to have different nuances between different courses and putting surfaces, but these are quite smooth by from what I've read. But even so, you know, that's the Tiff Eagle based, and some players will feel more comfortable and more confident on them than others. So we'll see how they go. And Barry has told us who he's backed. He's backed Hovland. Cam Smith as well, so we've got a trio of disappointment coming up that week on Sunday. And Carlos Ortiz, he's backed. And Ortiz actually is another one who did pop up on a few of my stats. It was the three-putt avoidance, I think, was something that alerted me to Ortiz. So there's a bit of logic there with that side of the that angle of approach as well from Barry. Hovland, Smith and Ortiz from Barry.
I'm going to keep my powder dry on Patrick Reed for Masters Week. He's just getting into that par four birdie or better statistic, Paul. He was seventh in that last year and he's just eked with whatever's happening at the moment. He hasn't played. He's into the top 12 this year, par four birdie or better. Patrick Reed. Yeah.
Well, after he wins this week, he'll be second or third.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Oh, dear. Should be a good tournament.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. It's always good to get. Well, last week was the cracking, wasn't really
outside of the outside of Dustin course. Johnson. Nobody knows who's going to win this. Looking at the actual odds compilers, I mean, it's open house, isn't it?
Yep. There's a lot where you can, you know, infer some reasons not to back a player, and kind of look a little bit further down. It's always dangerous. You know, someone like Rory McIlroy, his record coming off of a miscut is outstanding.
Yep.
And sometimes these poor performances, you know, from JT or from Bryson, you know, Bryson's clearly got a previous on the track. Sometimes poor performances the week before can just act as a, you know, a proper shot in the arm to these elite players, and they come out and just completely turn it around. I remember back in DJ at Doral off the back of a diabolical miscut the previous week. And it was 22-1 that week, and a lot of the comments I got back that week were, you know, what are you doing? Did you not watch last week's performance, etc. But
it's like people slating me off for Jordan Spieth the other week. You can't hit a fairway, Steve. What are you doing putting him up?
It's all opinion, Steve, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all the game, isn't it?
Yeah, and you take a stance.
I could say, and we keep saying McIlroy. He's right at this price now, this 16-1 price, where he's or a 16-18-1 winner, and everyone will go, oh yeah. And he does win quite often off of a horrible miscut.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, don't be surprised if McIlroy plays well this week. Yeah. That'd be my view. But
agreed.
Yeah, not quite enough for me to back him, but no, we'll see. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah.
Been another packed show. We will be back next week, of course, listeners, for I think it's the Honda Classic.
Arnold Palmer, isn't it?
Oh, they moved it all around. Yeah, they have. It's the Arnold Palmer Invitation. Have you got any action next week?
No, it should have been Oman next week, but that's been kiboshed. So we've got Qatar the week after. And then we're over to Kenya for a couple of weeks, including a doubleheader with Kenya and the WGC match play. So that'll be a trebly packed show that week.
So we will be back for the Arnold Palmer Invitational next week. You are correct. Oh, that's the other thing as well. And I should have said it. I do like Tyrrell Hatton this week because, of course, he has got previous in Florida on a tough golf course, i.e. Bay Hill. So, yes, I could see Hatton going very, very well. Thanks for your time, Paul. I hope everything goes well for you.
Yeah, best of luck.
Yeah, we need it. And again, if you could leave us a 5-star review, listeners, it would be much appreciated. Thanks for your support, and we'll be back again next week. Goodbye.